All right, sorry for that delay. Now let's get back to business. The Lockach Aza over here, Parshul Gaz, we're up to Shani. Dealing the Pardu, the Lockach Aza over here, Bamayim Ishtahar. Now we're going, now the first Aliyah discussed in detail the process of actually preparing and making the paraduma. Now we are going to discuss the process. We're going to discuss now the process of the application. Now that we have the special paraduma water, now what are we going to do with the paraduma water? We're going to apply it, sprinkle it upon the person who's tummy. How much oil we're going to sprinkle it upon an ohel, a bias. The bias becomes tummy. If there's a dead body in the ohel, and I guess that means that the entire bias is tummy. So you have to sprinkle the paraduma water on the bias, on the ohel. That's something you don't really hear about too much. This concept that if there's a dead body in a room, the room remains tummy after they remove the dead body, and the ohel needs to be purified. How do they purify the ohel? They sprinkle the ohel twice, day 3 and day 7. The alcohol hakelim the lokach ezoif, the kohen will take an ezoif. Ezoif is a hyssop. It's like some blade, a piece of grass. V'taval b'mayim ish tohar, and the one that will make the application upon the person who's tamei will be all that's tamei, or the utensil will be a person who is tohar. You need a person who is tohar to be metahir something else. You know, this principle applies in different areas of halacha. For example, when you toivel kelim, you buy a new utensil and you put it in the mikvah. So there is such a principle that you should first dip your hands into the water so that your hands should be tahar. That way, when you are taking your hands to purify the utensil, hands that are tahar are purifying a utensil and making it tahar. When the person's hands are tameh and he takes the utensil and he dips the utensil into the mikvah, and he never fully immersed his hand, and he's holding the utensil by the tip of his fingers, so then the hand that is being the taher, the utensil, is tame. So that's not such a good idea. We want the person that is being the taher, the utensil, his hand should be as tahor as possible. So he should dip his hands into the mikvah, so his hands now become tahor. So now when he will be metah the utensil, it is a tahor that is being metahir a kli, also making it tahor. Now I know that may sound strange, because today no one would want to do that. Because today the mikvois that are designated for kelim utensils are filthy dirty. They're very, very dirty, and it's probably even dangerous to dip your hands into some of these mikvois. Some stores used to have mikvois, special mikvois for kelim. And these mikvois did not look very pleasant looking at the water inside of this mikvah. Okay, so you go and you take the utensil, you put it in a basket, and you would lower the basket, and the utensil, you would swoosh the basket to make sure that the whole utensil is immersed fully in the water, and you pick up the basket, and now the kli is tar, and then you rinse it thoroughly under you know, fresh water, in order to make sure that you clean the utensil from the dirty water. So that's the way we live today. But the truth is that ideally, that's not a good idea. Ideally, no one does this because I guess sakana, because I guess the mikvahs are not so clean. But ideally, it should be the person that's doing the purification. He should be as tar as possible. I'll give you another example. When we do hataras nadar, which one? Many of us do in groups of four. It's Erev Rosh Hashanah. We do Ataras Nedarim, and there are four people sitting around, and each one reads the Ataras Nedarim to the other three. The other three serve as the Bezdin, and they say Hakol Mutarim Loch, Hakol Mechulim Loch, Hakol Shrim Loch, Ein Kan by Neder, Vele Yisav, Vele Shamtav, Vele Koinam, Vele Nidui, Vele Oror, Avoyeshkan, Mechila, Slicha, Vechapora. Everyone knows the Nusach, Balpeh, So you sit around four people. Which one goes first? Which one goes last? So let's say you're sitting around, you have some like little children. You have a big Rosh Hashiva. And the Rosh Hashiva, for whatever reason, he fell in. He doesn't have a choice. He needs to do a Toras Nedarim with some guys, you know, some people that are, you know, are not so ay ay ay. So you may think, oh, be mechabed, let the Rosh Hashiva, let him go first. No. The truth is, the most choshev person, the most distinguished person should go last. Why? Because this way, the before you get to the most distinguished person, each one of the three, we will matter their nedarim. So they're clean. They have already been purified by having their nedarim be released. So now they are in the category of being tohar. When they will go now and be matir the neder of the fourth person, we have a bezdin of three people whom are tohar, who are clean from vows. There's an advantage that if the one that's being matir, your neder, he does not have upon him any nedarim, that symbolically is an advantage. That's what it says over here in this pasuk. The pasuk over here says, over here we're coming to purify a person who is tameh. Who should be the one that dips the ezoif in the par aduma water and sprinkles the water upon a person who is currently tameh to make him tahar? The pasuk says, the one that does this, should he himself should be tahar. Ish, who should do this in ish tahar? The Hiza, and he will then sprinkle upon the tent, the Al-Kol HaKelim, the Al-Hanafashais, Asherah Yisham, the Al-Hanogeah, and likewise a person that's Tameh because he came in contact and made direct contact with the bone. Okay, if a person just happens to be in the Ohel, he becomes Tameh, but that's when you have a complete body. Let's say you do not have in the Ohel, you only have a bone. The bone is not in the Tameh Ohel. Then the only way a person can become tameh to masmeis is if he touches the bone. V'al hanogeya ba'etzem, ove cholol, ove meis, ove koder. And here it says the person who touches outdoors. So the person is outdoors and there's a dead body, he does not become tameh unless he makes physical contact. So someone touches a bone, we touch a dead body. Ve cholol. Now cholol means a person was murdered. And we're breaking this up into two categories, ove cholol, ove meis, or a person who died naturally, it seems, o vakover, or a grave. Okay, this is very interesting. It's interesting because this was in the Daf Yomi 2 days ago. We more than discuss a situation where a woman comes from far. There are two, man is married to two women. Married to two women, and they both come back from Medina Sayam, and one woman says that my husband died a natural death. And the other woman, the other wife, says that my husband was murdered. And the question is, do we let these two women remarry? And there's machlokes in the Mishnah. According to Rabbi Meir, we do not. Because there's a discrepancy. If one woman says that he died a natural death, and the other one says that he was murdered, there's something not right. Even though the common denominator is they both admit the husband is not alive, the very fact that they describe the way he died in different terms, different things, that is already suspicious. There's something that's not correct. So over here, it's interesting, we learned that two days ago, and over here it says in this pasuk, why when we describe a dead body, do we describe it in so many ways? Person touches the bones, or touches the cholol. A cholol ordinarily means a person that was died prematurely, was killed by a sword. Oy va meis, of meis is a natural death. Oy va kover, someone died, someone is in the grave. Okay, so what exactly does this mean? Let's see over here. Let's see, there's no Rashi. Surprisingly, there is no Rashi to help us navigate this difficult pasuk. We have some targim. The yisav. Yisav means to take. Ezoiva. Ezav means a hyssop. It's a type of grass. The yitbol b'maya, dip it in water. Givar, which water? The water of the paraduma water. Givar d'che, a purse that's tahar. Via day, sprinkle. A person whose tar should take an ezev, dip it in the part of the water, and should sprinkle al mashkina on a tent, or the alcohol ma naya, or on any utensil that was in the same tent that where there was a dead body, v'al naf shosa, or upon a person, d'havo talmon, that was in that tent. The al, and furthermore, sprinkle this water, al the yikrav b'garma, some that came near, came nogea, to touch, targum does often, he tied to the word nogea, to touch, he translates often as the yikrav comes near, b'garma a bone, oy v'kotila, or a dead body, some that was killed. Notice the word in the targum, kotila, oive mesa, or a dead body, oive kivra, or a grave. Okay, so this is what it says in the pasuk, and in this beautiful sefer Ma'at Tsari, I am going to give a very quick peek to see what it says here. I have the page open. To Sheni, okay, v'lokach ezoiv. And Pasuk Yud Ches, let's have a quick look what it says over here in Pasuk Yud Ches. Okay, the Havo, no. No, very surprisingly, no comment. Okay, no comment over here. Okay, let's go to the next Pasuk. Pasuk Yud Ches. V'hi Zohad, now, here it goes on again, it says, V'hi Zohad Torah Latomei. The Tahor will sprinkle. It's a repetition. Okay? There's a repetition over here in this pasuk. Why it has to say, it already said you will sprinkle. And he found the repetition over here. It seems like it's telling you when exactly. It would appear that Pasuk Yutches is coming to explain when Pasuk Yutches should be done. It should be done two times. On day 7, and day 3, and day 7. V'hi zahatar ala tomei b'yom ha-shlishi v'yom ha-shvi. Day 3, day 7. V'chitoi b'yom ha-shvi'i, and he'll be purified. The word v'chitoi means purification. B'yom ha-shvi'i, v'chi beis b'gadav, he'll then wash his clothing, which means he'll go to meal, he'll put the clothing in the mikvah. V'rochatz b'mayim, and he himself will go to mikvah. V'toher b'orev. So the pasuk we were telling you, the procedure over here is that they sprinkle the paraduma one on day 3 and day 7. And on day 7, after they sprinkle one of the paraduma, the person immediately, he goes to mikvah, and the clothing that he's wearing, they immerse in the mikvah, and he's not yet tahor until say sakachon. In the evening, when the stars come out, Rashi over here says v'chita b'yom hashvi'i hu gemar torasa. This is the conclusion of his tahara. Now that's a very strange Rashi, because the pasuk says that's not the end. The pasuk explicitly says V'chito, he'll be purified by Yom HaShavi'i. But it's not over yet. It says explicitly in the Pasuk, V'chibes b'gadav, he has to put his clothing in the mikvah, V'rachatz b'mami, he himself has to bathe, which is an expression the Torah uses to refer to mikvah, then v'toher, when b'orev. So there's really more. There's more to the purification process, which is going to mikvah and waiting for the sun to set. So what does Rashi here mean? Hu gemar toharosai. So I don't have an exact answer for you, but I think what it means, what it may possibly mean, is think about this theoretical case. What would happen if the person did not go to mikvah? The person, they sprinkle upon the paraduma one, day 3, and day 7. And on day 7, after he did the paraduma water, he did not. He's on strike. I'm not going to mikvah. Or let's say, for example, the mikvah is closed, it's broken, they're putting in new air conditioners, they're cleaning the water, and there's no mikvah available in the entire town for him to go to mikvah on day 7. They sprinkled the Parah Aduma water on day 7, but they did not even go to mikvah. And now it becomes day 8, day 9, day 10. So maybe one can argue that the sprinkling of the Parah Aduma water is invalid, because immediately after you sprinkle the Parah Aduma water, you must go to mikvah, and then you must have the hair of Shemesh, the sun, the stars will come out that evening. If you missed an in-between state, that in-between thing of going to mikvah and then waiting for Tzeis HaKachavim, maybe you can argue that the person is not tahar from Tumas Meis. He has to do it all over again. maybe he has to go do again day 3 and day 7, or maybe they have to just do it and redo day 7. Obviously, it's not going to be day 7 anymore. It's going to be day 8, day 9, day 10, 11, 12, whenever it's going to be. It'll be 5 years from now. They have to do a second sprinkling of Parah Aduma water, which immediately followed by going to Mikvah and Harav Shemesh. Along comes Rashi. Rashi says, no. If, for whatever the reason is, the person did not yet go to Mikvah, okay, so you didn't go to Mikvah, so go to Mikvah tomorrow, go to Mikvah the next day, go to Mikvah in a month from now, whenever the Mikvah is fixed. But when you do eventually go to Mikvah, you have to wait for the sun to set, but you never ever need to do again the sprinkling of the Parah Aduma water. The purification for Tumas Meis is just the sprinkling on day 3 and day 7. Okay, the Torah also demands that you go to Mikvah, but that going to Mikvah after you do the process, that is not tied, that is not a condition to validate the sprinkling. So, and therefore, if you don't do it, so you know you'll do it whenever you get a chance. It's no different than a person who comes in contact with an animal, a dead animal. A dead animal, so what is the halacha? It's also tumah. It's also tameh if he comes in contact with the dead animal. So you don't have to go wait 7 days. Whenever you get a chance to go to mikvah, you go to mikvah. And that's the end. There's no counting of 7 days. So here, that's what Rashi says, the chito, they will purify him by sprinkling Mayam Hashvihu Gemar Torosai. He's done. Oh, but the Pasuk says now you have to go and put your clothing in the mikvah and immerse your body in the mikvah. That's not a chelek of the process of Parah Aduma. And if you don't do that part of the process, it will not damage what you've done thus far. What you've done thus far, day 3 and day 7, is complete. You need to go to mikvah, so you go to mikvah. When you get a chance to go to mikvah, you go to mikvah. That's what Rashi really means when it says over here, Hu Gemar Tarasa. What does the Targum say? V'adei Dachya. So this is a little bit of a repetition from the previous pasuk, and it's explained in the pasuk. Then when he said in the previous pasuk that a person whose Torah is going to sprinkle, when will he do the sprinkling? On day 3 and day 7. The person comes to the Kohen, and he says, I'm Tamei. So they say, oh, you're Tamei? Okay, so right away, okay, so let's start from today. I think, if I'm not mistaken, he goes to Mikvah immediately. And when he goes to Mikvah, that starts day 1. Maybe I'm wrong. But day 1 starts on, I guess, the day after. The day after he comes in contact with Tumah. I don't think the day that he comes in contact with the body, that counts as day 1. The day that he came in contact with Tumah, that's day 0. And tomorrow is going to be a day when there's no tumah. He's not coming in contact. During the 7 days, he may not come in contact with tumah. When he comes in contact with tumah, you have to start all over again. That's for sure. So the day that he comes in contact with the dead body, that's day 0. The next day is day 1. Day 2, day 3. Oh, day 3, you come to Beis HaMikdash. The Kohen takes the Ezoiv. The Kohen must be Tahar. He takes a piece of grass, maybe it's even one blade. How big is an Ezer? One blade of grass. He dips it into this bucket of water and he sprinkles. All he needs to apply is a teeny, teeny mashahu, a teeny amount of water. You don't need to be immersed. You don't need to be immersed with a lot of water. That's the difference between the mikvah, the purification process. There's a purification of mikvah and there's a purification of hazor of Parah Aduma. Mikvah, you must immerse your entire body. Not no chetzitza. Parah Aduma water, a mashu, a teeny, teeny mashu of water is applied to the person. What's the pshat? Why when it comes to Parah Aduma water, you only need a mashu? When it comes to immersing something, you need your whole body? Very simple. When a person goes to mikvah, you yourself immerse yourself in the mikvah. When it comes to Parah Aduma, somebody else is purifying you. So there are many ways you can look at it. There's a fundamental difference. Mikvah, there's no halacha in the whole world that someone has to push you into the mikvah. There's no such thing. No halacha, someone has to push you. You willingly enter the mikvah on your own. Parah Aduma, you can't do for yourself. You need someone to do it for you. So, What does that mean? So you can say whatever you want to say. You can say is that there are higher standards for yourself than what you demand of others. When I demand someone help me, I don't demand someone help me the same thing that I need to do for myself. I need to help myself personally, with me and Hashem. I need to go all the way to the extreme. I need to immerse my entire body. Every part of my body must make contact with liquid. But when I ask someone to do me a favor, help me, help me. I can't be a selfish person and ask someone to pour water in every part of my body. You can't make demands from other people. Like, that's selfish. Even the Mashu, Torah is telling you that when you demand from other people, in contrast, when you demand from other people, relative to what you demand from yourself. Or you can say that when someone else does something for you, purifies you, the very fact that another person is helping you, that itself, it's humiliating. It's a whole new relationship, it's a whole new concept. When someone else enters into the picture to go and rectify the person, even a little bit that someone does for you goes a lot more than what you do for yourself. Remember, that's a very basic person. The person cannot help himself. Someone wants to lose weight. Someone wants to... Basically, I think it's very well accepted that it's almost impossible to go on a diet on your own. The only ones not the only ones, but a major chunk of people that are successful in losing weight, you talk to them, you know how they lost weight? They have a coach. They pay a ton of money. They go to a nutritionist, dietitian, I don't know all these fancy words, nutritionist, a dietitian, or they have a life coach, and they basically, they're professionals to do this, and they whip you into shape. When somebody is on top of you, or their spouse, even the person's own spouse, they watch their every move. Okay, they watch their every move. I know some people like this. I went to some Mitzvah Shabbos a couple weeks ago, so he takes out this delicious, delicious 7-layer cake. And he says to me, listen, I want to eat this now. I want to eat this. I'm very hungry. If my wife sees me eat this, she will kill me. So I'm taking this out. I'll give you a piece also. I told her I don't want to eat this. I'm not interested in this. I want to eat this. My wife comes in. Basically, you're going to say that it was for me. It wasn't for him. When there's someone on top of you watching your every move, that goes a much, much longer. It goes a long way than what you do for yourself. So when someone else sprinkles the paradigma water upon you, even a small amount goes a long way. Versus what you do for yourself, you have to go immerse yourself in your entire body in the mikvah. It's much, much more difficult to achieve a result. Okay, this is drush. Okay, so going back over here to what it says in the Targum, V'yadei dachya al misa'ava, a person who is tohar will sprinkle upon the one who is tameh. The word so'af, samach aleph beis, always means tameh, and the word dalet chof yud always means pure. These are two popular words in Aramaic. I have them many, many times. The yadeh will sprinkle, dachya, the pure, al misso'ava, the one that is tameh, biyoma tili so'a, on day 3, biyoma shevi'o, day 7, vidakine, and the person, now this is a different word, this is the same word as dachya, vidakine, he will be tohar. You say, again, this goes back to our old principle, Targum is always coming to simplify the vocabulary. In English, they don't translate this the same. Let's see the English. The hizah hatohar alatamei bayomash albiyom the Torah on day 3 and day 7, the one that is pure. Okay, a kohen who is pure is doing the sprinkling. The chitao. Okay, and then it's on the 7th. It does purifying that person. All right, it does it in English also. I can't be critical over here. But because over here we have two words which both in the English and in the Aramaic is being translated with the same exact word, pure. The tahar means pure, the pure person, and the word vichit'o, it's a verb form of pure, thus purifying the person. Now that's a chiddush. It's a very big chiddush for the English translator to use the same exact word for two different Hebrew words. The only one that has the right to do that is the Targum. Because that's what the Targum does. The Targum, he simplifies the language, he takes multiple words which are completely different words, with a completely different root, and he translates them in Aramaic exactly the same. He has a license to do that, but no one else does. No one else does, not any English. So Mr. Rappaport, do you have in front of you an English art scroll? I'm very curious to see what the art scroll translates the word v'chita'o.
Also purified.
Also, okay, it's a chiddush, and they're really grappling to find the good word. It's a different sheresh. It's a different sheresh. Ches tes aleph. What does it really mean? It means chait. What does word chait mean? The way we sin. And what do we always learn over and over again, a thousand times? Every single word, when you manipulate its vowels, you can transform the word 180 degrees. You go mikotze lakotze. So here what it would really mean, yishrash, yisharish, same exact letters, only difference is the vowels. It will take root versus to uproot. 180 degrees, exactly the same letters, it's just a manipulation of the vowels. Chet means sin. Chet. Chita means the removal of chet. The removal of chet is not the same thing as tohar. Tar means purity. It means possibly there never was a sin. Tar, to a degree, means, let's make that assumption, even though it's not necessarily correct. You say a person is a tohar. The way we use in our language is, he never sinned. Yavoi tohoirim v'yasek b'taharis. Let pure children come. A child shaloi to'amu ta'am chet. A child never sinned. He doesn't know what it's like. He doesn't know what it's like to have the taste of sin. So we call children Tehoirim, they're pure, they never sinned. The word chitoy means to remove the sin and thus make the person tahor, but it has a connotation that the person sinned. There was a chait, and now we're going to remove the chait. It doesn't mean the person's going to be forgiven, by the way. Okay, it doesn't mean the person, that's a separate concept. A person does an avera. These are very deep concepts. When the person does an avera, there are two things that happen. Number one, there is accountability. You did an avera, you have violated Hashem's commands. You've violated a direct order. There are consequences. That's simple. Number two, the fact that you've sinned, that contaminates your neshama. And these two things are not necessarily related. How do you know they're not related? If a person will purify himself, he'll work on himself, then he'll never ever do this, the sin that he has done. He uproots it. How does he uproot it? Basically, he trains himself to never ever do such a thing again. But just because he has trained himself or he has done things in the spiritual world to cleanse his neshama from the stain of the sin, it doesn't mean that he's not going to suffer the consequences of violating Hashem's command. He still needs to do teshuva and say he's sorry so that he has atonement. Atonement. A person smokes, and he causes himself damage. He smokes, so his lungs are not functioning the way they should. So he goes for rehabilitation, he goes for some therapy, and he trains himself to hate cigarettes. never again will he ever smoke a cigarette. And over time, he exercises, he takes medication, whatever he does, and he cleanses his lungs, they're pristine. But the person still has on record that he has violated a rule that he was not supposed to smoke. The damage that he has done to himself, okay, if he'll go to a doctor and he'll take certain medications, maybe he can repair the damage he did to his body. But if he was not allowed to do this, let's say whatever, there were rules and he broke the rules, that has a separate consequence. Okay, the separate consequence, if a person goes and he smokes on an airplane, you know, there's a very big fine because they, you know, there are different consequences. He has to pay the fine. He also damaged his lungs. Well, I cleanse my lungs. Okay, you may have cleansed your lungs, very good for you, you're a healthy person now, but you still violated the rules, and there's a fine that has to be paid. That you need to do teshuva for. So here when it says v'chito oy, v'chito is a completely different word than the word tahar. Tahar means you never did an aveira. The person that's sprinkling the water upon aduma, he's not shaykhless. He was never tummy. Doesn't mean he was never tummy, but it means he doesn't need the par aduma water now. Right now he's tar. He doesn't need this. He's just here to help someone else. And now when he sprinkles upon the person, it achieves the chit oy, the opposite of chit, the removal of chit. So it's a different word. It's a different word. And if you want to really go down deep, it's completely different. Yet, in the Targum, this is a classic rule of the Targum to take a word and translate multiple words of Chumash, which are sacred and they have different meanings, to simplify the Pasuk by translating completely different words with the same exact translation. It's a tremendous chiddush. You know, the more we learn about this concept, the greater the chiddush of Onkelos is, because the more you learn, the more depth you notice, you know, the more you see that every single letter, every dot, every syllable, everything is jam-packed with chidushim, and it's not the same. So for the Targum to go backwards and is to take what is much more complex and to simplify it, that's a chidush. That goes against the grain of everything that you learn in yeshiva. The goal is to make things complicated. We always like to say, oh, what is the difference between a professional and an amateur? What's the difference between the two? And the answer is, a professional has the talent, or through his training, to take something that's very complicated and make it look very simple. Very simple. You go on the airplane, you go on the plane, and the plane takes off, goes 1, 2, 3, again, the plane takes off, it lands. Big enough, no big deal. You say to yourself, I can do the same thing. I can sit in the cockpit and I can just push a few buttons and zil bazach. The professionalism of the pilot is to do something which takes years and years of training and took a century to build such a complicated machine and to make it look to the passengers, no big deal, nothing. You come on, it's comfortable, you sit down, it takes off, lands, big deal. An amateur, it's someone who takes something that's very, very simple, and really is ABC, it's pi, and he's such a shemazel, he makes it look very complicated. That's the difference. You have something very simple. What can be so complicated to serve someone a glass of water? Tell someone when you come into the meeting, say, my name is so-and-so. I welcome everyone, and I take a few questions, and then I get up and I leave. It's very simple, right? But when you have everything written down on a card, mila b'mila, what my name is, what the date is, what I'm supposed to do, you take something very simple and you make it look very complicated, you're in a lot of trouble. You're in a lot of trouble because it's supposed to be the other way around. It's supposed to be things that are complicated. You make it look very simple. I remember someone told me years ago he was very close to Netanyahu, Bibi Netanyahu. and he said he was amazed. He was very young then. He came to America, and this person, he was going to speak at a dinner, a very high profile dinner, and basically Netanyahu knew nothing. He didn't even know where he was going. All he knew was that he was supposed to speak in front of 1,000 people at some gala event for some major organization. Netanyahu got off the plane, and the limousine drove him to this hotel. And this person was assigned to go, and as Netanyahu walked from the limousine to the stage in this hotel, probably like, you know, the plaza or, you know, something equivalent today to the Brooklyn Marriott, to basically fill him in on the organization, what it does, who the guests of honor are, and everything he needs to know to make a speech. And he was waiting there very nervous, for Netanyahu to come. And he finally comes, and he gets out of the limousine, and he says, "Tell me what do I need to know? Tell me." And he asked a few questions, and he just told him this one does. This is their mission statement, and this is the guest of honor. This is why he's special. And really, as he walked up from the limousine until he got into the stage, and they introduced him, he told him everything there is to know. And then Netanyahu gets up, and he delivers a speech in perfect English, with describing the organization and giving honor to the guests of honor and giving honor to the people who run the institute with such precision and such eloquence and such accuracy that this fellow who did this, he couldn't believe it. He couldn't believe how could just like that. Just like that, walking in, you tell a person, that's a professional. A professional takes something which is very, very complicated and he makes it look very, very easy. Targum takes something that's very complicated and it makes it look very easy by taking multiple words which really mean things that are very, very different and making and giving them the same translation. That itself is a chokhmah. And that's what goes over here. The time over here says, Vidakine. The word Vidakine is the same exact letters, Dalet Chaf, like the beginning of the Pasuk. Viade Dachya, Dalet Chaf, the same Sheresh. Pure, a person who is Tahar. To translate the word Tahar, he will sprinkle Al Misa'ava, the one who's Tameh. Vayay Mashash of Yamashri. Vichete'oi. That's a different word. And that needs to be defined. What that word is, a different shoresh. Ches, tes, aleph, chet, sin. Sin is synonymous with contamination. And here we're going to now undo that contamination, undo the sin. And the Targum says, for our purposes, translate that word the same way. Purify, vidakine, dalet chaf, and make him tohar. Shocking thing to do in the Targum. If the English does it, you know, they couldn't find the word in the English vocabulary. That's their problem. But for the Targum to do this, the Targum was giving me Sinai, the Targum is teaching you alumnus in Chochmas HaTorah. There are times when you're supposed to make things simple and not make things complicated. When Vitzaba is another very popular word. It means to clean. It means that in this context, vitzaba, it is interesting that it uses the word vitzaba, does not use the word mitoivel, immersed in the mikvah, livushohi. Okay, tzaba means, a tzab means a color. A color, and I guess that it means to remove the color, remove the stain. Remove the stain, the tzeva. Tzeva always means a color. And here it's also a manipulation of the vowels, which means instead of giving something color, to remove the color. The Pasuk says, a kushi, no matter how much you try, cannot remove the black pigment from his skin. It's a Pasuk in Chumash. Could you imagine if they knew about that Pasuk, they would go berserk today in this country. Can a kushi, hamir, can a kushi, we didn't have Torah, can a kushi remove the blackness from his skin? Okay? I know, by the way, I know of an organization, it's a secret organization where they have black gerim. In fact, I was even asked to participate.
Could you imagine if they could take the pigment out?
Then they, I don't know what they would, but I, and these guys, they're unbelievable. These guys are not to be, the unbelievable. These guys, who they are, it's just mind-boggling. There's a group, there's a, even a WhatsApp group of them. And every once in a while, they have a party. They have like you know, there's someone who, like he sponsors for them a beautiful, like, a su'udah. And they give each other chizuk, because they have a very big, very hard time. Gerim, in general, very, very big nisyonis. Very hard for them. Black Gerim, it's a very, very difficult life. And this fellow who was also, he's not mamish, black, he's dark-skinned, he understands what they go through, and he spends an enormous amount of money on this. And over the years, he built up a whole chevra of these people, and he gives them tremendous chizuk. And the greatest chizuk,
what are these people?
Black Gerim. Black.
What is it?
Black. 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 Black is beautiful. Black as
Jews?
In the, what?
Black Jews?
Yes. Not black Jews. Black Gerim. Converts. Okay. Tzaba means color. Vita means to remove the color. And over here, that's not really what it means. It means here to go to mikvah. But yet he's translating the word very literally. V'chibes bigodav levushoi. V'yaschei b'maya. Yaschei means to clean. Okay, that's an interesting word. V'yaschei b'maya is an interesting word, that word. Let me see if we can get over here and have a translation there. No. Okay, v'yaschei b'maya. V'dakei, and it'll be tohor b'ramsha. Ramsh is another nice word in the Targum, it means in the evening. Alright, we learned over here, we have Rashi over here, we did the Rashi, we're still on Tutsukim today. Alright, for me it was worth it. I hope it was worth it to come. Thank you very much, everybody, for coming. Have a wonderful evening. Mir Tashem, tomorrow we'll continue.
Have a good night.
Have a good night. Good night, everybody. Good night, Hashim.
Grace of God,
Hashim. Good night, Mr. The Gladders left. All right. They left already. All right, Mayor, so we're going on Wednesday. We're going on Wednesday to the cemetery.
Okay. I have no problem. I'll bring supplies.
They don't need our supplies. They don't need us.
I would like to get Simcha Soloveitchik's what he wrote.
You want to call him up?
No, you call him up.
I call him up. I call him, you should know, like every other Friday, I try to call him. And he's a difficult person to talk to.
No, you don't have to talk to him long. He has Gmail.
He has no email. I used to do the email for him. Whenever he needed to get an email, I would get the email and print it out for him. You don't know who this guy is. Simcha Soloveitchik is a very hard person to communicate with.
The latest I heard is that, you know, there was a shooting in Chicago?
Yes, yes.
One older Jewish person was killed.
Who was killed?
They don't know yet.
Terrible.
They don't have that.
Terrible, terrible, terrible.
Yeah, there were a bunch of Lubavitchers. They even had a mitzvah tank was going in the parade.
It's a miracle they survived. It's the yard site. The zuchus of the yard site. They never saved them. They said that they had a tefillin booth. They had a tefillin booth.
There was a block away.
There were a lot of people that were shot. There were a lot of injured people. There were a lot of people that are in the hot. They are very severely injured. They were shot. How many died? What did they say? Four or five people died?
Six
already. Six already died. Terrible. And then they say there's a whole collection of people that are very... The mamish...
They just arrested the guy.
Oh, they got him? He looks like... He doesn't look normal. He doesn't look like he's a normal person.
That's going to be the excuse.
He looks like a meshugna. He looks from a sugar. He looks like an animal. A modern bria.
There was a guy somewhere in Ohio... Running away, a black guy was running away. The cops were chasing him, and yesterday they chased him too. So today When they caught him, he was shot 60 times from all directions. Cops learned a lesson.
That's right. You shoot to kill. That's right. That's right. Someone shoots at you. Right. You shoot to kill.
You want
to
fight? Okay. Take out all the 60 cops and fire 60 cops. You know?
That's what they do in the fire. That's a firing squad. That's why there are many people, because you can't pin it down to one person.
Right.
Yeah, but in this country they'll take all 60 and put them away for life. That's what they'll do. That's how crazy they are. They'll take all 60 cops and put them away forever.
No, they won't.
Yeah, that's the kind of country we live in.
Because to have that, you have to have 60 trials.
Today, you know that today 300 policemen in New York City quit. Because no one has their back. 300. Right. Do you know how much the city in the entire world, you know who's the best trained, who they spend the most money training on? New York City policemen. New York City policemen, the government spends on them probably $1 million each to train them. To train them, they give the skills they have is unbelievable. They have the best equipment, the best training, the best everything. And after they train them, the city spit on them. They spit on them. They say don't, the Sharitz, they're the Melech. Eved Yimlech. Eved Yimlech. So they quit. Can't
all right,
job.
I gotta run.
Zay
Gazon. Take care. Good night. Shkayach.
Good night. You